And now, the International Vienna for Everyone. And now, the International Vienna for Everyone.
But your French is still used to not having air conditioning.
Yes, yeah, like at home, in the flat, I don't have air conditioning. But at work, we have anyway, because I work in a lab. And I mean, we have the office also, but in biology, the labs are often air conditioned. Otherwise, there are many experiments we do that will not work. So if you are too warm, you can always go in the lab. So that's fine.
Yeah. And you get a lot of different smells. Or what's happening in the lab?
I mean, for us, it's not, it depends the day, because actually I have different type of experiments. So I'm working with fungi. So there it's like we grow fungi, and then so we do more molecular biology. So it means what is happening in the fungi really at the DNA level, or doing modification at the DNA level, and then studying which impact does this have on the behavior of the fungi. So we do, for example, lots of DNA extraction or DNA modification. So it's more like using small pipette and liquid, and you mix things, so you don't really see what's happening, but then something happened.
You're a woman scientist.
Yes.
Should I say woman before I say scientist, or should I say just scientist and I shouldn't mention woman to not make it look like, hey, there are also woman scientists? How do you want to put that? Personally, I would prefer just to say scientist and not male scientist or woman scientist, just scientist. So that's more like gender equality rather than just saying woman scientist, because then it's like an award, like you're not all of you can, not all women can be scientists, but you are a women scientist, so you made it. Like you were not supposed to make it, but now you made it.
I mean, for me, usually we are introduced like we are scientists, and if I speak about myself, I would never say I think I'm a woman scientist. I'm not offended if someone say, oh, you are a woman scientist. It also depends the context, like when they present you why they say this. I think it just proved that it still needs to be said. I think if there were as many women as men, we would not even have this question, because it would be obvious for people that there are also women in science, and it would not be a debate. So I don't really mind, but I just think the fact people need to specify, because we specify just for women, we never say, oh, I'm male scientist. So it just proved that there is still work to be done for it to be perfectly normal in people's mind.
How do you end up in science?
I think for me, very young, it was, I mean, I was interested, because already when I was a children, I grew up more in the countryside, and I was very interested to find out, for example, why when animals get sick, like sometimes we are finding, I don't know, dead animals or animals who were injured. I was always fascinating how some people in the countryside, they know how to like fix the animal and make them able to fly again.
Why were you fascinating or surprised? Because they had no like academical knowledge how to do that. They just learned it through life, or what do you mean?
No, because I don't think I had this, even this knowledge that people can, for example, I didn't know who went to university or not as a child, and it didn't matter. It's more you are impressed by people based on what they can do. You don't really know their background or what they went through, because I think as a child, you have issue to imagine the past, that people have been something else than what they are now. So it was never in this mind. It was more because I thought, okay, it was fascinating that, for example, sometimes my grandma was seeing a rabbit, and she was and I wanted to save the rabbit, and she said, no, there is no point now for him, it's over. And I was like, how do you know? Because it seems like magic. It was like, okay, you know if you can do something about it or not, and you know what you can do about it or what you can try. And I was like, but how do you know? And also, like, sometimes I was starting to hear about, I don't know, cancer or disease. And I was like, how do doctors know, like, they should keep fighting or they should stop for this person? And also, I mean, there is progress, because you hear, oh, science made progress and this could be cured. So it's like, what is an end today might not be tomorrow. So it was the idea itself of life, like, what is life? How do you know it's the end?
How do you prolong it?
Yeah.
If you can prolong it.
I mean, I was not necessarily fascinated by prolonging it at any cost. It was, what is the difference between something that is, because once I remember we had, it started like with a sort of rabbit we found, and I really wanted to save, and my grandma said, no, he's going to die. And I was like, but why? And she explained, because I didn't understood the concept of death. Mm-hmm. And she told me, but it's because, you know, sometimes you drop a glass and they're broken. And sometimes based on how it's broken, we can stick them back together. And sometimes we cannot because some pieces are missing.
Great example.
And I was like, yeah, but how you know a piece is missing? And I was like, which piece? And how we know this piece could never be fixed? And that was kind of the part. So I think very early on, I was more interested actually by biology than medicine. Because what fascinated me, it was more the mechanism, like how does it work inside and why sometimes it gets broken. So it was a fascination really early on, and it took me a while to find out what job kind of it gives or what do you study to find this out. But it was really obvious.
Do you still focus on animals?
No, I'm more into microorganisms. So it's like bacteria, fungi. I also worked before with more cells and viruses. So
is it what you like?
Yes, yeah.
Or it's just something that you find that might have more market in the future and might give you a better job?
No, I think at first I really, it was more like in my study in the beginning, it was more general. So you study every, I studied kind of every field of biology. So
basics,
yeah. So you could go then in any direction. And quite fast, I actually went away, I would say, more from animal or purely human biology. Because there actually, I think then it's you have all, it's very interesting. But when I discovered more microorganisms, I found this also very interesting because they can do, like, there are so many of them, like there are such diversity. And I think they have actually a very high potential because I think we tend sometimes to focus even in medicine on the human part. But even a human is built with like bacteria. And so it's like you're not just a human, you are a sort of symbiosis.
Yeah.
And so all this world that is around us, but we don't necessarily see, I found it was fascinating. And quite fast, I went more into bioprocessing. So it's using microorganisms to produce something that can be of use for us. And it was not necessarily thinking about, I think, the job perspective. It was really because it was interesting me. And actually, in the beginning, I was more told, yeah, there is not so many job perspective in this field. And during the time of my study, it actually started to change. And now many companies go from chemistry to biotechnology. But it was not the case in the beginning. So when I went, actually, I had in the beginning lots of doubt because even in my family, they were telling me, but you're sure, like this field, it's really new. Maybe there will be job, but maybe in 20 years. And then things went really fast. So it's also, I think for me, it's also sometimes that I have students now that ask me if I have advice for orientation. And it's also actually something I learned is that now in science, things are moving so fast that I think if you have to choose your orientation, I'm not sure that betting on what's the next big thing is a very good idea because you don't know, because it's changing so fast and you don't know which technology is going to go big.
Yeah.
But I think if you really choose something, you like the process and you like it, then at some point you will go somewhere. Because if the whole process is painful and you just do it for the final thing, it's going to be very long, I think, and you are going to fail on the road, I think.
What level of studies are you now?
So now I'm finishing my PhD.
So that's a long way.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing PhD?
Now it's my fourth year.
Like, fourth year?
Yeah, I'm going to finish the 4 year in September.
So before these, there were 2 years of master's or more?
So before, I actually worked for 5 years. And before this, I did, so I studied in France. So the system is slightly different. So there we study, we don't have really for engineering bachelor and then master. We have a sort of cycle of 5 years. And then you get the master at the end, but we don't have the bachelor in the middle.
I didn't get that.
It's the...
Explain.
Yeah, so the French system, when you study engineering, doesn't really follow the European system where you have bachelor, master, PhD.
Yeah.
In France, you have a 2 years of general education.
After high school, you mean?
Yes, after high school for engineers, you have 2 years where you study a lot of science, so chemistry, physics,
mathematics, I guess.
Mathematics, biology, and then you have specialty. So actually, I already had a specialty in biology, and there you even study philosophy. It's also mandatory, geology, geography. So it's really like they put you lots of stuff. And then after 2 years, you have a national examination, and there you have a ranking. And based on your ranking, you can enter certain engineering schools.
Okay. So are they giving up for this system? Because apparently they're having quite a lot of revolutionaries. Maybe they should educate people less so they can rebel less.
I mean, I think they should change the system, but I don't think it's going to change soon.
Yeah.
Because it's actually very, like, more and more people are applying to enter the system rather than to the standard system, because we also have university that follow the bachelor, master, PhD system. But in France, the engineering school system is highly elitist. Mm-hmm. So it's a very old system, and there is a sort of rankings between school. And when you apply for a job, or even later on in your, academic career, there is a certain prestige assigned to this school. So I don't see the system changing soon, because most of people who make it at the top of companies or politics, they usually come either for one of these engineering school or one of the business school who have a similar system. Mm. So it means they would destroy the system they come from. And I don't think it will happen.
Yeah. You're the second or third French person that I meet in Austria that lives in Austria. And I think I've never met a French man that lives in Austria or Vienna. Do you generally migrate? Austrians migrate, or French people migrate, or no? Is it a common thing to leave France?
I know Frenchmen in Austria, so
okay.
Yeah, some. It's hard to know, because I don't know the number, for example, but I know there is the French embassy or things follow this. I think lots of French go abroad, but I don't think Austria is the main destination.
Uh-huh. Where do they usually go?
I think a lot go to other French speaking country.
Like Canada?
Canada, Belgium. For studies, actually, a lot go there, and then I think more go to the, if it's really job related, they will go to the US, I think, or UK also. Like London had a huge French population before Brexit. Now they still have a big one, but I think it decreased.
It's left before Brexit.
I think it's also, it depends, like some do it, some don't. I think it's still a good proportion go abroad, but it's not similar to country like the Netherlands, where a really big part of the population have been abroad.
How do you feel here related to other French people? Do you connect with them, or you don't like to connect with them? They are boring to you? You hate them?
It depends. I mean, living abroad, often between French abroad, we have a sort of joke that there are two categories of French abroad, that are the one that tend to stick together, and usually they meet even in a French restaurant and stuff like this, and there are others that avoid French at all costs. And they meet some, but often that they already know, and these ones are often so well integrated, people don't even know they're French. So I would say I'm in the middle. Like, I know of a French, so I don't avoid them, but sometimes I know them from work, like we work in the same building, or through...
You might have a beer with them once in a while, but that's all. You don't want to get stuck in the French mood all the time.
Yeah, for me it's more this, is that I'm afraid. I mean, there is a comfort for sure to with your own culture, because it's your own language. So usually when, if I meet with French people, it's also for this, it's because I don't have so much people with whom to speak my mother tongue. But in this regard, it can also be people who are not French, but French speakers, because it's, for me, it's more like the fact of, yeah, you speak your mother tongue, it makes you feel something different than when you speak another language. Or sometimes to think about, if I meet a French person, is to think about, oh, I miss this and this. But sometimes it can be tricky and you can go too much in that. And I think it can slow, in the beginning at least, slow down your integration maybe. So if I hang out with French people, it's more French people who really, for example, want to stay in Austria. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I met people who were more there for a limited amount of time, and then I had the feeling it was more holding me back on learning German or getting to try to integrate more with other Austrian.
So it's very rare for me to have such a long conversation in English with a French person. What is the thing about French that they don't want or they don't speak English?
I think there are lots.
Because if you go to France, it's rare to have a full conversation in English. And it seems like they don't even want to talk to you in English, even if they might speak English.
I think there are lots of things that there is. One that is the system in school to learn languages.
Which is?
Like, for example, we don't have so many English teachers that are native speakers because they also have to pass a sort of national test to get teacher, and the national test is actually sometimes not that easy to people who are native speakers. Mm-hmm. So it's weird, but and they have issue to recruit also English teachers because the conditions are not that good for teaching. And also in school, the way they teach the language is very shaming. So for example, I remember in school, if you speak too well, people are going to say you try to act for something. And if you speak bad, they're also going to make fun of you. So in the end, no one speaks in the class and no one progresses. So it was my experience in school in France. And mainly I didn't really learn English, I think, through the school or the university. And so this is the first point. So people have very bad memory usually of English class or language classes in the school.
It's true. I met once a Frenchman. He had studied English for 14 years in school. And he wasn't that old. He was like 30 something, an old man. And he couldn't even answer like a full sentence to me in English. Like a short full sentence, he couldn't answer that. 14 years he studied English in school.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. Like in companies, I had lots of colleagues where they were actually not that bad, but they really had, if they had to make a phone call, like to another manufacturing site abroad and speak in English, they had a sort of traumatic moment and they were really stressed by the call. Or if we had a phone call, they were really sweating. And I had this experience. So I think there is a part, linked to school and a sort of traumatic event. And I also think that there is no incentive from the job market because you can still have a job even in a big company by just speaking French.
It's not like a qualification that is needed to get a better job or a higher salary or something.
So there are some companies that ask for it, but not so many. And even in a big position, I had the experience that people didn't speak such a good English, and you even see it in France with the politician that are supposed to have a more international experience and things. And you hear them speaking English and you're like, okay, that's our representation abroad.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, weird that they, for example, that they don't make effort to speak better English.
How about the group that you're involved in at your university? You mentioned the group of female scientists of the Technical University of Vienna, right?
Yes.
Is it just within the university, or it operates like in national scale or European scale or global scale? Or are you related to other groups that are outside your university?
The group is even focused on the faculty. It's FemChem.
FemChem, like so female chemistry.
Yes, it's a network of female at the Faculty of Technical Chemistry, at the Technical University of Vienna, and currently they are focusing on the university, because originally they were created following a sort of competition inside the university, where they were looking for initiatives to improve the representation of women in science, and especially at TU, and the situation when this group win like the competition, so the group was officially founded, there was actually no female professor at the faculty.
No.
Even though like about 30%, 40 of students were already female. So it's not like no one study, no female student like are present. And there was no evolution like in the last 10 years. So then they created the network and they won like a professorship position that would be assigned to women.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started to create an entire program to and to understand like why there are not enough women in science and try to propose actions to increase the position of women. So either through workshop, also sensibilization, and also that women see where they can find support to empower them and to also attract women from outside the university that would like to work here.
Well, what are your concrete steps? What's happening? Because that's I understand the goal, the mission, but what's like the thing you are working on concretely?
Yeah, so like in daily basis. So then we have like several working groups.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one is focusing on competence enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
So they propose a workshop. So some are just for female scientists, and some are open to female and male scientists. And they can be technical workshops, so training on a specific software or technique, or sometimes there are more workshop related to how to apply academic skills into the industry, how to transition, or how to develop your CV. So a workshop that can be more not directly scientific. Mm-hmm. There are also a part that is organization of events to put women scientists more in value. So, for example, there is this annual scientific meeting where there people have the opportunity to present their work, so what they have presented at other conferences. We also have another event. So this is the main events.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it can be smaller events that are more punctual, like more so that women as a network can meet and discuss.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have also studies, so to understand specifically in the faculty what's going on. So for example, this year we had a big study on the impact of parenting on scientific careers. So to see if there is if based on your gender you experience parenting differently, and if it has different consequences
mm-hmm.
on your scientific career. So this was a big work.
Isn't that something that might affect every kind of career, not only scientific career?
I mean, of course. I think it has an impact on every career. So I think you could transpose results maybe to other things. The specificity in scientific career, especially in our faculty, is that, for example, pregnancy can also be a challenge because we work with toxic products.
Right.
So, for example, you can be excluded from labs from the moment a woman is pregnant or even during breastfeeding. So then if you are hired to do experiment and suddenly you cannot do them, the impact is way bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So there are solutions in place, like for example in companies but there the idea was actually to study in details like what is actually happening, like mm-hmm. in our faculty, what is the process, like what actually exists and what do people know, because sometimes there is a difference. Which solution have been put in place? Like if you listen to women who had this experience, how did their supervisor react? What was put in place? How was it welcomed by the environment? Like were people positive or what did they have like negative reactions? And also asking men, like when they announced they were getting to be a father, what were the reactions in the environment? And also even afterwards, like after the children are there, so how do people manage to maintain their scientific career? And also, being a parent, because there are I think it's more academia in general, you have a challenge of, for example, going to conferences, where often you have to travel to go to these conferences. But this is not specific to, I would say, scientists.
Yeah, and it seems like, for example, I would say this is more like a general thing, like trying to avoid women to be pregnant at all, or because what else can you do? That's the only gender that can produce future members of the humanity. So in the sense, at what level can you avoid things to do for women who are pregnant or have kids? Like, because you can't avoid to make kids, right? And you don't want that, right?
Yeah, yeah, but there it's not the proposition, because the idea
Of course it's not that, but at some point women who want to have kids, they will have kids, and then where does it start that you want to put this woman back on the career track? From what point?
No, so the idea is more to actually understand what is a career made of. Like, what are the, for example, when we say like that, okay, someone had the child and it's like it slowed down the career. The question is why, in a way, and how? Because when we say someone's career was slowed down, what do we mean? Does it mean they didn't have the same opportunity? And also why? Because there is the question is that often there are actually solutions. It's more that people don't see them. Like, for example, in companies, often it's sometimes handled better, because a scientist's job is not only to go in the lab, there are other things they need to do, like produce articles or actually go to these conferences. And for example, if a person is pregnant, they might not be allowed in certain labs, but they could still do office work. And maybe because anyway, in the academic system, more you go up, more you delegate. Mm-hmm. Maybe someone else can do experiment for you, for example. Or maybe you could switch experiment with someone, or maybe not every labs are forbidden, because also not every experience you need to do is toxical. So it's more that currently, actually, we are more in a situation where people are radical. It's like you are pregnant, you need to be protected, mm-hmm. or you are breastfeeding, you need to be protected. And we don't think about you need to be protected from what, and is there an environment in which you can work where you're not exposed to these substances? And this in general actually is not just a reflection for example, a person that will be pregnant, because if in general you can know, okay, for example, you have labs where people work on this toxical compound, but this lab is completely safe, it will also simplify in general following people exposition to substances that are toxical.
So what would help then to make labs more women friendly in a sense?
I mean, they are
friendly.
I cannot.
Or you say that it's not true that these environments are toxic for pregnant women?
I think you have substances that are toxic, like they are proven cancerogenic and things. But then you have ways to protect people. So depending on the exact product, like you can have measures of individual protection, like protection people can wear, or sometimes you can buy specific equipments in which people can do these experiments, or sometimes there can be a logic of replacing some compounds, because sometimes another process that is more recent exists. But in academia, you will face the problem that sometimes this new experiment is more expensive. It could be to reorganize, for example, labs in a way that you have labs where you put all the toxical compounds over where you put compounds that are not toxical. You could, switch experiment between people. So it's actually more organizational. So just rethink how you organize your team.
Well, and so they are like easy way right now. They're not really going deep into that and how they can improve it. They just go, you're not going to enter the lab until your kid is 1 year old, or I don't know, or you stop breastfeeding him. Instead of this shortcut, they can just think about it a little more and have proper protection.
Yes, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily, I would say, the easy way. It's more that it's actually specific also more to Austria, Germany, that have a very protective law to this regard. And also, so they really say that if anything happened to you during your pregnancy, the employer is responsible. Mm-hmm. So as a consequence, they tend to really want to take no risk. And I think there is also more something linked to the structure of academia, where in a company, it's easier to adapt because the goal of the company is to like serve the purpose of the company. So if you have a team of people, it's easier to reorganize tasks. Mm-hmm. Because people function more as a team. Mm-hmm. In academia, you're evaluated individually. So it means as a researcher, people are going to count how many articles you published. So if you you ask someone, okay, can you take an experiment from your colleagues or exchange? I think supervisor feels more like they cannot force people to do this. That is up to them, because at the end of the day, they will be evaluated individually. So there are teams where this works better than others, I think, because they have technicians. Or because they have student employees, so these people are not evaluated on their performance, so they are more willing than what you will find in companies that change the exact. So in the end of the day, it's like you can have the feeling that each person needs more to watch out for themselves than it will be in a company.
How many people does this group have?
In total, actually, I'm not sure.
Like approximately, it's like a 20.
No, I think it's more 100. Around 50.
Yeah, 50. 40, 50. You're all the technician universe?
I think currently almost a big part of the... Yeah, I think most of the female professor, for example, assistant professor, associate, and a big part of postdocs and PhDs are joining the group. So it really becomes a network of all the female scientists of the faculty.
You speak English together?
It depends the group, like, because some working groups have lots of non-German native speaker, then the group will speak in English. Other working groups, if most people are German native speaker, they will speak German. But I think we also have a lot of non-German native speakers in the women at the faculty, so I think most groups work in English.
Do you speak German yourself?
So I'm learning, but I'm not yet at the fluency level.
Okay. Well, how do you find it?
Sorry?
How do you find it? Like, how is it for you?
To learn German?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like any language. It's not easy. I think in the beginning, I mean,
I wouldn't say any language. Try learning Latin languages that are pretty
easy. Yes, yeah.
French is much easier. I wouldn't define it as a hard language to learn.
But I think it depends where you come from. Because if your original language is Latin, all the Latin languages are easy for you. But for example, Latin language might not be easy for someone who comes from a German language.
Maybe.
So I think it's more the distance to your original language. So of course, for me, German is way more harder than Spanish. Or that Italian would be, but I think it's the genders, for example, that can be challenging, even though it exists in French too, the gender, and also like the fact that you have accusative, etc. Because in my language, as a logic, it doesn't exist. So then I have the feeling I get the logic, but it's a lot to learn. So it's more like there is a lot that I have the feeling I really need to learn. And I think it's, for me, what makes it hard sometimes, it's more the contents. Like, I know that when I learned other languages, like Italian or English, I watch or read lots of content in these languages. And even before I started learning the language, there was a movie or there was really some kind of piece of art I really wanted to understand in this language in the original version. To German, I didn't have the same relationship. So it was more I came to Austria and I need to learn German because I want to communicate with people. But the other language I learned before, it was more I learned them because I didn't need it at all. It's more I had time and there was an emotional need. Yeah. And here it's more a practical need. So it's a different motivation. And in terms of personality, I think I tend to work more on the emotional motivation than the practical motivation. So for me, it's more, the thing, it's like doing sport, like learning German. It's more discipline things and I need to do it. And when I don't feel an emotion when I'm doing it.
Was a PhD your main reason for moving to Vienna?
Yes.
4 years ago, right, when you started?
Yes.
How did you end up finding it?
It was kind of random because at that time I was living in the Netherlands and I was looking for a PhD. And so I was watching at offers and at some point I see an offer in Austria that was reposted by someone that knew someone I knew, kind of. So on LinkedIn, like you see someone like the post.
Yeah,
So it was random and I saw the offer and I said, yeah, it's not bad. So I applied. I came for interviews in Vienna. I kind of find, the city's pretty. So I kind of really like the city and I would say the vibe of the city. And then I actually was not taken for this offer, but then I really liked the city, so I thought, oh, I could look for other offers in Austria.
Oh, it's not the offer they brought?
No.
Oh.
And then, but then I was offered another one, and yeah, that's how I happened.
How does Austria. It work here in Austria? You get paid when you do a PhD?
Yes. So I don't know if it's the general case, like if everyone get paid, but at least at the TU, I think most people are paid. So you have an employment contract with the university. So in Austria, most of the time, the standard is you are employed for 30 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this, like it's really standard, like they have a defined salary based on if you are a PhD or postdoc.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pay you this amount. And I think in Austria, it's quite, I would say it's quite a good amount compared to other countries in Europe. And
you're basically working on your research, so you're also studying, but that's your work. That's why you get paid.
Yes. So then there are differences based on like you can have two type of contract in academia. You have some people who are university assistant and others that are project assistant. So the project assistant, they really just work usually on their project.
That What's is your case?
PhD. I'm university assistant.
Uh-huh.
So the project assistant, they work on their project. And and then they also need to study because you have some courses you need to follow. And then the university assistant, they also need to work for the university because they are paid by the general budget of the university.
Mm-hmm.
And there you are involved in teaching. And also you can be involved in administrative tasks or maintenance or being responsible for some equipments. And then you need to do your studying and work on your research project.
You plan on staying here? Are you planning on going back to France?
I think for the moment I'm planning to stay in Austria. And then I think I would reevaluate in, 5 years.
Why would you like to stay?
Because I think there is a good quality of life. Like. Mm. Because, for example, if I compare to France, it's like in average in France we have lower salaries for the same type of job.
Mm-hmm. And the rents are higher.
Rents are higher. Yeah, so we spend a lot more money in housing, I think, than in Austria. And I think the cities in general, I mean, it's not true for every city, but the big cities are less green than in Austria.
Mm.
So when it's warm, you feel way warmer.
Mm.
And I have the feeling since I arrived in Vienna, I think the city is quite easy to live in terms of temperature. Also, you have the feeling like the architect, in terms of architecture, you have more space and you have more green, so it feels less oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the feeling you also have, at least for myself, I had more opportunity there because it's a small country. Even if you think about the scientific part or the startup part, people get to know each other faster because there is less distance and there are not so many people you need to get to know.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in France, the country is bigger and it's very centralized on Paris. I mean, in Austria, this could be the same for Vienna, but in France, it's really a lot of headquarters are in Paris, lots of big research center. So if
you don't like Paris?
I think for me, it's too much of a big city. And it's like, if you don't want to go there, it's like at some point in your career, you have to pass there if you want to have a big career.
Mm.
It's not always true. There are people, some scientists that never pass there. But still, there are many opportunities that requires that you go there. And if you are in another region, for example, even in the, if you think about things like the startup scene or things in France, it can also be very centralized on Paris. So...
But what is it that you mean with career or success? What? Where are you trying to get? Do you want to make more money? You want to change the world? You want to go up some steps? Like first you're assistant, then you want to be a professor. It's not about the money. It's about the title. It's about changing the world. What is it about for you?
Life for me, it's about curiosity. I would say, like, I don't necessarily want to follow the academic path, like mm-hmm. becoming professor. So when I think about career opportunity, it's more having the chance to do different things. So, for example, for 5 years you do something, the next 5 years you do something else. So it's
experiencing things.
Yes. So it's more like following like scientific interests. So it's like being able to like, oh, there is this scientific project I would like to, it's more about solving questions. Like, oh, I have this question, I have this thing. I want to see where I can get with this.
So when you solve one question, then for you, that's a success.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's not, because sometimes you start with a question and usually it brings another one. So I don't know. So I don't know if we really ever solve completely a question. But it's more, sometimes you find an answer to something else than what you're looking for. It's how science works. But you have the feeling that you learn something. So for me, the progress is more, oh, okay, I learned something new. Because I think it's more what science is about, is curiosity and learning. And it's like always, you know, it starts with, oh, you are curious about something, so you try something. It might not, you might not get what you were expecting most of the time in this situation. And then you like, okay, what do I do out of this? And then you go, it brings you to something else. And so it's more following this, I would say, reasoning.
But what's the point, your point, where you just stop and you reach what you wanted to do, and then you relax and stop fighting? What's that point? What, where are you trying to go?
I think this is a good question.
Thank you.
I'm not sure. And I'm not sure most people really know, like I think in research in general, because it's always the huge, it's always the huge debate, like when to know when to stop. So sometimes the answer is like when you're tired, because it's like, you're like, okay,
you're dead.
For some people, yeah, I think it's when at the end of the career, like they spend their entire life on the same problem. I think for others, it's when you feel like, I think for me, it's when I feel I cannot bring anything new anymore on this topic. Like maybe you feel like, okay, at first I came with a new perspective. I tried things. Now I don't see what else I can try.
What is your thing that you're, the new things you're trying to work on or bring on the table? For example, you're trying to cure cancer or something. What is your thing that you're, where are you trying to go?
I think what I'm trying to, well, I mean, ideally in the future, I think what I would try to go is like to connect more fields, because currently I don't see myself like going in academia and being like become a professor in a very specialized field. I think my thing would be more to bring people together that we're not together. Like, I mean, for example, previously I was very interested by biosecurity. And I started to investigate.
Biosecurity?
Yeah.
What's that?
So biosecurity, it's more the topic related a little bit to dual use research. So dual use research is when you do, for example, research on, for example, with COVID, there was lots of debate around this. It's like, okay, we do, because in the beginning, there was the suspicion that some labs, for example, did research on COVID and it's how it escaped, because people say they were doing research on how to make a virus even more contagious, for example, or deadly. And for example, some people in the scientific community, some people think this sort of research is justified because it will help you to understand what makes a virus more spread faster, so then you could identify a virus that is capable to spread faster. But other people say, yeah, but this is more dangerous than it's useful, because you research this, then maybe you publish it, and then someone who would like to use this for to injure people could just do it, because now they know what is the mechanism, or you can work on it. Maybe you make a mistake, you will free the virus, and we created something worse. So this is what is called dual use research. It's all the research that can have be used two ways. So either it could be used for something better, but it could also be used for something that is way worse.
Well, like the atomic bomb, I was just, what they talk about in Oppenheimer. I don't know if you had the chance to look at that film, to watch the film.
No, I didn't see the movie yet.
It's physics, but I would say it's also pretty related to chemistry. So it might be very interesting to watch it. And that's pretty much the doubts that the film talks about. Like, we can create this big thing, but some people might use it for bad. So it's this doubt thing. Were you involved in COVID research?
No.
Not at all? Or it's a secret that you don't want?
No, not at all.
It's like a government secret.
Currently, I'm working on fungi biology, so it's very far from COVID research.
So going back, what is your goal? Because I sorry for jumping topic to topic, but I remember where we left off.
Yeah, so my goal would be more to... Yeah, so I was going to this biosecurity topic because, for example, this is a field that is not so developed. So I think, okay, if I have to do something next, it's a field I would like to go because I think there is something to develop. So my goal is more to find topics that are maybe under investigated and like bring people together to do it. So yeah, so that's more my goal. Like I like to have the feeling like to assemble people together, they do something together and like to create something.
And always we're talking science?
I'm not sure necessarily. Like I think in general in life, like even in the past I worked for, like in my free time for associations.
Uh-huh.
And it's also usually like, for example, the role I like to have or what I like to do is like more bring people together. So more like project leader, like you do something together and then maybe they will discover what they're good at doing and they will go somewhere else and do the same thing again. So it's more this that I think I would like to do full time in the future.
Seems like you could work for the international. That's what we tried to do as well. Bring people together. Also, it's like that's a nice goal and you think you... But it still seems like something you can reach pretty soon.
Yes, I think.
What are you going to do after that?
But I think you can do more of that than on a bigger scale. Because for me, it's more, I like to do this, like, you know, bring people together.
So now you're just telling me, that that's not just your goal.
Yeah.
Your goal, it's more than that.
Yeah.
I want to know when is the point that you're going to rest, that you've done everything you wanted to do, and now you're just going to buy that house in the village or go back in France and enjoy wine and cheese and all right, I did whatever I want to do. Now I'm sort of retiring or taking it slow. I'm just going to be passive in my works.
I don't know. I think I don't see myself ever reaching this point where I say, okay, now it's fine. I mean, it depends. Like because sometimes it's more if I see a topic and I think I can bring something to this topic and I need to do something about it. I want to do something about it. So for me to completely retire, it would mean that I feel like there is nothing left. I have nothing left to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have, I mean, it would mean that the world is a perfect place to live in and stuff, and I don't think it would ever be the case. Or that I think that the people available, because it's more this like the topic I'm not interested in, not because I don't find it interesting, but because I don't think I have much to bring to this topic and there are people who are more competent than me there.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there are, so it can also sound megalomaniac because it sounds like, okay, I go there because I think no one else can do it better than me. But sometimes it's more this, if I start to see, okay, there are some people that can take over, then I don't feel like I need to stay because I'm like, okay, they reached a level of competence where they can do it. So
uh-huh.
I can pass to something else. So I think if for me to stop completely, I would have needed to reach this point where I think, okay, everyone, like for every topic I was interested in, there are people who are better than me. There is nothing to do. So I don't think it would ever be the case. Or if it was, then I would still like to, I don't know, train people for something where I think, okay, because still if I done all this, I would have accumulated lots of experience. And then the idea would be to train other people to keep doing this.
What do you do? It seems like you work a lot. What do you do besides working? Like just to relax, you just sit in cafes, smoke cigarettes and drink and listen to Edith Piaf?
No, I don't smoke. So, but no.
Well, now you have two characteristics that French people usually don't have. You speak English and you don't smoke.
No, I think lots of people don't smoke. I think this stereotype is actually not true because I think in the youngest generation, very few people smoke in France.
That's what Godard taught us, that every French person
smokes like
and stays and does nothing.
Like it was at this time, there was a sort of, I think, wave of movies where they were doing this. I even wonder if they were not sponsorized at that time by, I think some movies kind of receive money from sometimes.
Like the wave that trying to promote something or different organizations. It's always like that. There's always something like this. But let's not ruin the dreams.
No, like I think in free time, I'm currently quite boring. Like because...
You are boring or you are bored?
No, I'm boring. I think in the way that I don't do extraordinary stuff, like I read books. I think I'm like most people, I read books.
That's not like most people in the first place.
No, but I watch Netflix, maybe too much as well.
What are you watching or what have you watched recently?
I watch everything. That's kind of...
So you're just like browsing there and not really paying attention?
No, it's like... lately, like yesterday, I watched The Witcher.
Okay.
For example, I actually watch lots of sci-fi things.
Like what? You watch Black Mirror?
No, but it's more anticipation, I would say, than...
Anticipational?
Yeah.
What's that?
That it's more... kind of like 1984
way. I thought it was the name of a series.
No. I mean, I'm really like in sci-fi and stuff. I don't know if you have a magical power or if it's really a complete different world. The things like Lord of the Rings and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit nerdy or...
It's more like fantasy rather than sci-fi.
Yeah. And then I also, on the other, I think... like extreme sometimes I like I also watch sometimes documentary series like either stuff on food, but I stopped a little bit because sometimes it makes me want to eat the food that they are showing afterwards. I want to eat this food that they are showing, like,
yeah, but
this.
You're trying to avoid to not eat it.
No, it's not this, but it's like if you watch this in the evening and you need to go to bed and suddenly you feel hungry because you watch
what's the problem?
It's not like very practical. So lots of food stuff, and also like very stupid stuff. I like the sometimes this American series where they are in a lost village where they all know each other and nothing is happening.
So like can, reality shows?
Not so much. So, I mean, I tried. Like sometimes I watch stuff to see, Indian matchmaking.
But do you like them or why do you watch them? Just spending the time and while cooking or while doing something else or while watching the phone?
I mean, it depends. Like the series I watch them because I like them. Mm-hmm. And reality stuff I tried, and sometimes I watch it more like a social experiment. I didn't watch many. Like I think I watched Indian Matchmaking, and I think there was another one.
Into Matchmaking?
Indian Matchmaking it was.
Uh-huh. What's that?
So it's like they have a matchmaker, so people will make a arranged wedding.
Uh-huh.
And this person travels like the Indian community in India and also in other countries like where you have a big like Indian communities to try to make people find a partner to marry.
Mm.
So no, I don't know. There I was. I thought the main character, the matchmaker, was kind of funny. I like the way she.
Who's the main character?
I don't remember her name. So the main character is the Indian matchmaker who make the people meet. Because I found it was funny how she analyzed people and say, like, sometimes she know in advance it's not going to work, but still she present them this person because it's going to make them reflect on the fact what they are currently looking for is not what they should be looking for. So it was like the psychological part, I think, was interesting. And also like to see her process of saying, okay, I think they look for it, this, they should not, and they should look for that.
Just don't forget to pull your microphone a bit closer, or otherwise we're losing you. And the sound goes all over the room before close to the microphone. Well, what do you read? Or what are you reading?
So it's very different. Like sometimes, like last week I finished, like the last book I finished, it was Born a Crime.
Trevor Noah.
Yeah.
I heard it's a cool one.
It was. I was surprised it was actually well written because there are lots of books sometimes from people who are famous. It's not so interesting.
But I think he wrote that when he wasn't that famous yet. Like in his first step when he was doing just stand-up comedy before he took over The Daily Show.
Okay.
I don't know if you watched him in The Daily Show.
Yeah, but I don't remember. I didn't check when exactly the book was written.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was before that.
Okay.
And but he's a funny guy. I believe that he wrote the book.
Yeah, I think the book has I think the book expresses the style he has on speaking about things. Like you see, he really analyze like people, like society or what's going on. And sometimes even things that are rather sad, he succeeds to express it in a funny way.
Mm.
I think the book is also interesting because he has an interesting story, because there are people who are famous that have nothing interesting to say.
Yeah.
Or at least they say things and you cannot, like, you don't learn anything special, or you cannot relate, like, based on their experience. I think there it's a very specific experience for him. Like, he was a mixed child under apartheid. So it's not something I was not so aware of all the rules of the apartheid in South Africa. So yeah, there were lots of things I was surprised of, because I knew it existed and I know the concept, of course, but I...
What do you know about that?
I mean, what I knew is that there was apartheid, like, and then, you know, it ended. So I knew that, for example, black people are not allowed in an area where there was white people. Mm-hmm. That it's a basic concept. And then in school, they teach you more how it ended. So I knew more the historical parts and things. But there it's more about the details, like how it was to actually be black, and also how he figured out the concept of race, because in his environment, he had a black mother and a white father. Mm-hmm. And he didn't really understood in the beginning that he was considered as by the other people as a colored child, so like a mixed child, and what this implies. So it's more him discovering the concept of race, like racism, and how it works in a society. And because it was, it's kind of, I don't know, similar to kind of Candide, like this book of by Voltaire, where it's a character that arrives and know nothing about the organization of the world, and makes it look like it's stupid, because the character asks a very simple question, and you see that people cannot really answer them, and their answer it's like it is, because it's a system. And there it's a little bit the way he analyzed, I think, the South African system, seeing it shows like the absurdity of the fact by showing that the rules themselves they are contrary to each other. But he also shows how the system impact people, and also on the long term, because he also speaks about when it ended, that it was not like suddenly black people have access to everything. So he also shows how the apartheid impacted what they think about each other, and which ethnic group can think about each other, and that it increased in a way when it ended. It even increased the tension between black people, because they have been used to see each other as different. By the apartheid, and this leads them to try to fight each other to take power afterwards.
I should definitely read that book. It's been on the list for quite a while. You have it?
I borrowed it at the library, so I have to bring it back.
Okay. Oh, you just read it now recently?
Yeah, like I finished last week.
Well, what are you doing now in summertime when you're not very busy with university, right?
I mean, in summertime for me, it's the same, because like work for the university.
You don't stop?
We don't necessarily stop. Like, it's like a regular job.
Right.
You have like 5 weeks of holidays, and you are on holidays when you take your holidays.
Have you taken your holidays yet?
No, it's end of August.
Where are you going?
I'm going in France, so it's not very...
Going back home?
Original, yes.
Who's left there from your family?
So most people, like my close family, like siblings, parents. I also have almost all my grandparents. Then I have my cousins, aunts, uncles. So most, they all live there.
You stay in touch with friends as well?
Yes.
Do you also have Austrian friends here a lot, or how do you get along with Austrians here?
I don't have so many. I mean, I know I have some Austrians that I meet, but most of them I know them from work. So
but
because
it's
I think
something
it's
after work.
Yeah, so it's more like we say it's more related also to science, that like in academic life you spend a lot of time in the university, so most of people you know them from the university. Yeah. And then the others I know, like Austrian, are mainly through my boyfriend, who is Austrian.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more some of his friends. And otherwise, I think, so it's mainly people. Currently, the people I see outside of work, it's mainly people I know from work.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of them are internationals also at the university, and there are a few Austrian.
And how is going to be the trip in France? Just staying home or are you traveling somewhere else?
No, this time is just like staying where my family is and see my friends and family I didn't see in a while. And maybe go to visit one or two things. But I think there it's going to be quite intense in the amount of people I need to see. So I think it will...
What part of France are you from?
I come from south of Lyon.
South of Lyon?
Yeah, so it's called Isère, like it's the north part of Isère.
I know. Is it... There's another Isère in France, I think it's near Nice, or it has nothing to do with it. It's like a small mountain.
Ah, no, there is a ski station called Val d'Isère.
No,
okay.
It's Isère that actually has its own beach a bit down there, which is called Isère-sur-Mer, like every other beach in France.
Okay. No, but I think maybe it's written differently because there are also things that sound the same.
It's Isère, actually.
Yeah.
E-Z-E.
Okay.
And what's the, how is it spelled yours?
It's I-S-E-R-E.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, because there is also, for example, Issoire. So there are lots of stuff, I think, for someone who is not French that sound the same.
Well, it sounds like a cool vacation. Anyway, it's always nice to go back in France, have some nice food.
Yes.
And enjoy the temperatures. Hopefully it's going to be, is it like a, there's a beach nearby? Where are you from?
No.
You're not going to see.
We have lakes, not so far, but we don't have, I think the sea is maybe 2 hours, 30 away.
Yeah.
So it's not something where we don't go there regularly.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I'll send you this podcast and maybe postcard because I was saying postcard. But I'd still like to hear more a little about, before we close, I'd like to hear just a little more about, let's call it organization, a group that you're part in. Like, is there, I asked you already about the concrete steps, but what is the next one, something you're working on that is coming up soon, or like a statistic or a survey or something we need to know and follow?
So currently we had like this big study about the impact of parenting on care. So these the results.
Did the results come?
Yeah. So the final results, they will be presented on the 20th of September. So there will be a presentation of the results followed by a panel discussion, like with the rectors from TU. And also expert actually from other organizations where they actually put in place already measures, so to see, to show what can be done actually and what is already done in other organizations. And following this, I think that we will see how it turns out, but I think then we will, we already kind of started to reflect with the dean of the faculty on which actions can be put in place in the short term, on the long term, and on the midterm to provide the solutions.
Cool. So 20th of September.
Yeah.
Will it be in English?
The presentation of the results should be in English, but at the panel discussion will be in German.
Good, so we're not getting a shit of what's going to be said there. Will you be there?
Yes, I will be there.
Okay, then I'll still try to follow up with that. I'm interested to know how the results going to come out. Anyway, you can check the podcast after it's done at theinternational.at or on Spotify. Or which one use more? Like Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
I think
these are
Apple Podcasts. Yeah.
Apple Podcasts is there as well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.